Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, May 11th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the internet at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work, a tool called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect in my life to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships for almost 18 years now. It's also a tool that allows me to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. It's built right into our consciousness, right into our ability to be aware. And you can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like, absolutely free. And while Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice work tirelessly to provide these things, they frequently remind us that while they make these things available for free, they have not figured out how to do it for nothing. So they are paying for the internet show, and they're paying for the website, and they're paying for their travel when they go to give a presentation. So if any of the work they're doing and working so diligently to make available to you is benefiting you, if you have the financial resources to do that, you're encouraged to donate so they can keep doing the work they're doing. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. If you do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see a glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will allow you to download a completely free and private app. That app contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of the worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have actually called in with a problem or concern and chosen to do a worksheet process, and they've been stepped through the worksheet process live on the show. If you choose to listen to those, they can serve as a tutorial for you to figure out how to get the most benefit from this powerful, life-changing tool. You can also choose to join us for a support group. We have two support groups, one on Thursday night, one on Tuesday night, from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central. And all the information you would need to join us for one of those support groups is available at mindshiftersacademy.org. And I like to remind people, because it occasionally happens, that people try and log in to the Tuesday group using the Thursday login information, and it doesn't work so well. So there's a separate page for each worksheet, I mean for each support group. And the info to log in through Zoom is available at mindshiftersacademy.org. Also on that website, you'll find various audio files, highlight shows from the Mindshifters Radio, and you'll find specifically the shows we've been doing since January 10th related to the Way of Mastery with commentary. And so please feel free to check that out and take advantage of that. It's another resource that we make available to try and facilitate people learning and growing in their skill of applying these tools to their lives in a beneficial way. And if you have any comments or questions or testimonials for us, answers, requests, you can give us a call at 563-999-3581. When you call that number and press 1, it will put a little hand icon by your phone number, and I'll announce it by your area code and turn on the microphone so we can have a conversation. And as I like to say, we greatly appreciate it whenever people choose to do that, because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. Our intention with this work is to be of service. And if there is a way that we might be of service to you, please let us know. You can do that by calling 563-999-3581 or sending an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if you're listening to this in the archive because you don't have the capacity to listen live, if you send us a comment or a question, we will address it on the internet show, and then as time allows, email you back and let you know what day and time we addressed your comment or question. So we're wide open for comments, questions, or suggestions today. Yesterday we finished the review of the Way of Mastery, Lesson 9. And so if we don't have any comments or questions today, I'm going to proceed with the review of Lesson 10. And the Way of Mastery, from the first lesson on, is trying to help us understand that what Michael Rice likes to talk about is perhaps one of the greatest missteps we've ever taken as humans, is that we bought into a fallacy, a falsehood, that we are victims, that we are not creators. And we've had it hidden from us that our mind energy is a creative, a very powerful creative force, and that it's always on. And so from the first lesson on, Way of Mastery is trying to help us correct that misperception and to understand at deeper and deeper levels how we are actually creating our experience of life each moment by what we choose to focus our conscious awareness on, and by the thoughts that we give value to and pour our mind energy into. And the first axiom in this work is on page 5, and it says, nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. And, of course, most of us sit and think, well, I don't want what I've got. I don't want this poverty I'm saddled with. I don't want this physical ailment. I don't want my husband or wife to leave me or my boyfriend to dump me. Or so a little bit later on that same page, page 5, the Way of Mastery lets us know that the Way of the Heart, and this whole first book of the Way of Mastery is called the Way of the Heart, the first 12 lessons. This pathway, this way of looking at things, this way of living your life moment to moment is not the way of the intellect. Last night in the support group, people kept coming up with, yes, but what about, you know, how about, and what does it mean if, and what if I think everything is, all events are neutral, and so it doesn't really matter what I do, and then I go off and I start hurting people and acting in irresponsible ways, and all of those judgments, all of those questions are in the realm of the intellect. And every one of them that leads to a negative conclusion, these deeper spiritual teachings tell us they're all based on false assumptions. If you know anything about the rules of logic and the system of intellectual logic, you will understand that you can take a false premise and start building on it and build a whole system of thought that seems to make perfect sense, except for the fact that it's built on a lie. It's built on a fundamental falsehood. One of the fundamental falsehoods, fundamental beliefs, is that you could somehow be actually alive, totally awake, totally in touch with your true nature, and then go do something that hurts yourself or somebody else. And these teachings are trying to wake us up to the fact that that won't happen. All we need to do, we don't need to create love, we don't need to create, you know, value in ourselves and others. All we need to do is wake up to the essence of what's already there, to the true value that's already there, to our true nature, to our value, to our role in creation, to wake up to what this series of lessons keeps bringing home to us, the truth that is true always. And what is that truth that is true always? One way that they say it is, I and my Father are one. I and my Creator are one. I can't be separate from the forces that brought me into existence. And those forces are the same forces that have brought galaxies and planets and the Grand Canyon and every river and every ocean on the planet into existence. And I'm not separate from any of that. Another way they say it is, you remain as you were created to be. You were created from the flow of creation itself. You were created to have consciousness, which is connected to every other consciousness, and that never changes. And when you wake up to that, these deeper spiritual teachings tell us, when you're awake and aware of that in the moment, it is not possible for you to act in a way that is harmful to yourself or someone else. So all of those intellectual processes and judgments that say, well, wait a minute, Lesson 9 is saying over and over again that all events are neutral, but if I take that position, then the next thing is, well, I don't care what I do, and it doesn't matter if I, you know, rob and steal and murder because all events are neutral. That's based on the false premise that it would be possible for you to be in direct conscious connection to the truth of your source and then act that way. And what these spiritual teachings are trying to wake us up to is, when you are consciously aware of your true nature and your role in the flow of creation and the power of your mind energy to be a creative force, when you're awake to that, fully aware of that, it is not possible for you to be in pain, to be in suffering, and or to do something that's harmful to yourself or someone else. So every time you reach a judgment, you're in a contracted state. This is from Lesson 3 in The Way of Mastery. It says, if you understood what happened in your mind, in the energy system you call your body, whenever you judge, you'd never judge again. Because the very cellular structure of this thing you call your physical body ceases to function. The cells don't take in nutrients. They don't eliminate waste. They don't move away from toxins. They don't repair worn out parts. When you judge, you go into contraction. When you judge, you pull yourself out of the flow of life. When you judge, it's the opposite of what they call love. It's the opposite of being connected to your source, consciously aware of your connection to your source. Judgment is of the intellectual processes, and judgment can only mechanically churn through whatever it, as an intellect, has been taught to judge and value and weigh and compare and be in competition with. And in this book, they say, look, the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. The way of the intellect is just this mechanical part of your consciousness. It's like this garbage can that's been shoved full of trivialities. Thoughts, judgments, evaluations, rituals, belief systems about what's good and bad and right and wrong. This fruit is good, that fruit is bad. This behavior is acceptable, that behavior is unacceptable. I saw a meme recently that had an imam, and he's dressed in black, and that's a holy man from the Muslim tradition. And there was the Pope, and he's dressed in white, and he's the holiest of all the holies in the Catholic tradition. And then the meme says, so God told the guy in white that he can't marry or have a wife, but he should drink wine. And God told the guy in black that he can't drink any alcohol, but he should have four wives. That reminds me of one of my favorite cartoons of all time, and that is there was I think the comic was BC, and it had these three cavemen in the picture, and one of them was on his knees with forehead to the ground and hands extended out in front of him in front of a pile of rocks that was, you know, vaguely looked like a little pyramid shape, pile of rocks, wider at the bottom and narrower at the top. And next to that pile of rocks, there was another pile of rocks. And then there were two cavemen standing off to the side. And one of the two that were standing off to the side said, look at Grog. Doesn't he look silly? He must not know that our pile of rocks is the real God. And I had that cartoon saved for years, because to me that represents a fundamental truth of all religious belief. It's just intellectual, mechanical, you know, our God is better than your God kind of, it's like playground stuff. You cannot be consciously aware of your true nature and then do something that's harmful to you or anyone else. So all of the intellectual processes that say, this is bad, that is good, this is wrong, this is right, we know the truth, somebody else doesn't, all of that is the way of the intellect, and it's nothing more than the garbage that's been shoved into the intellect. It's like, reminds me of what we talked about in one of the earlier lessons where there's from the Way of Mastery, where it says, look, there's this whole thing about manifesting. And if you clear your mind and you do all these little magical prayers and these little rituals, then pretty soon you get the car you want in your driveway. Now, this book is talking to us about how powerful as a creative force our mind energy is, and that our thoughts are, and that the thoughts that we value are so powerful in creating our experience of life. So this book says, yes, that happens, but it's not rare, it's not a secret, it's what's happening all the time. Your mind energy as a creative force is always on. And the problem with people who want to teach it as though it's a special trick or a trait or a magical thing is that while it can be useful to remind us of the power of our thoughts and intentions and the focus of our mind energy, this book says, the problem with that is that we can only desire to manifest those things that our culture has told us have value and that we should want to manifest. And it's a constant parade of jumping from, I want to manifest this so I'll be happy. And then once I manifest this, I'm happy for a moment, and then I generate fear that what if I lose this and then my happiness goes with it. So now I have to be vigilant and protective, and I have to buy an alarm system, and I've got to always remember to lock it. And then I have these fears. What happens if I lose this thing that I manifested, whether it's the relationship or the car or the money in the bank, et cetera? And then after a while, because the fear is there, I'm not as happy as I wanted to be after I accumulated this thing or acquired this thing. So then I shift to something else that I think I need to be happy. And then I start doing the manifesting tricks I was taught, and I manifest that because people say, you know what, if you get this, then you'll be happy. But that's just what's been programmed into my mind. And so using this work, using the realization that your mind energy is a creative force, it's always on. Understanding that if you stay stuck in what your family and your culture and your religion have taught you, you will be forever in that cycle of wanting something you don't have, finding some kind of a way to pursue it, either stuck for years pursuing it without satisfaction or achieving it, acquiring it, and then the satisfaction fades away and then you have to find another target in an endless loop of acquiring. That's why Guy Finley says in one of his talks, look, I'll give you something else to want to manifest. I'll give you something that has actual value for you to manifest. Manifest a way to be happy in this moment with whatever you have right now. And if you figure out a way to manifest that, which of course we can, and that's what all of this work is about, then you have something of value. And your life will never be the same as long as you continue to apply the knowledge of the benefit of manifesting a way to be happy, content, in the bliss state, in the alignment with your true nature, with whatever you have in this moment. And that leads us to Lesson 10. And the title of Lesson 10 is, The Way is Easy and Without Effort. As we talked about before, if you're a Western mind and you read that, your mind is yelling at you, that's garbage. My life has been arduous. It takes a tremendous amount of work and suffering to get what you need in this life. And as we move forward and read through Lesson 10, I will once again remind you to watch for that part of your mind that would rise up in anger or judgment or fear or bitterness or hurt and argue against what's being presented. Because if you start arguing against it, you're not even letting it in. And you can't evaluate it. You can't try it in your life. You can't put it into practice to see if it actually works that way for you in your life unless you're willing to let it sink in, to test it out without pushing it away. And this may not be true. This might be an absolute falsehood, that the way is easy and without effort. I want you to test it out. I want you to find ways that you can change what you've been doing your whole life and have a different experience and see if it's possible for the way to be easy and without effort, to see if your life can get better with less struggle. So the text of Lesson 10 reads, "Beloved and holy, children of light and love divine, as always, I come forth to abide with you from that place which we share eternally as the one and only begotten Son, meaning offspring of the Creator." The word Son in the ancient language meant anything that arises from something, that which is begotten. "I am, therefore, that mind which whispers to you in each moment of your inspiration. I am indeed that mind that sneaks into your mind in the space between two fearful thoughts. And in that space between two fearful thoughts, I remind you of the truth that sets you free." Just take a breath or two and think about what that might mean. Think about what your mind does with some sentences about the space between two thoughts. What does that even mean? The intellectual mind can't even comprehend that, because the intellectual mind is simply the result of a series of thoughts. So there is no space between thoughts. There is nothing of value in the space between thoughts, even if we can get ourselves to observe the space between thoughts, not to the intellectual mind, because the intellectual mind is literally constructed by the network of thoughts. The text goes on and says, "Once I was a man, that is, just like you. I once turned my attention and became identified with a unique being that was birthed in time and faded away from time. And I walked upon your plane as all men and women do. But as I walked upon your planet, I began to ponder the meaning of creation, the purpose of my very existence. And while others seem to be gleefully caught up in, or at least surrendered to the ways of the world, that is, seeking out their momentary distractions, their attempts to gain and control as much wealth as they could, and all the rest of it. As that would happen, I would often wander off alone. I would sit beneath the trees beside a flowing stream to try to unlock the mystery that shows forth itself as the beauty of a flower, to try to see the power that revealed itself as the wind that would dance across the grasses, and to count the sparkling diamonds shimmering across the surface of a lake as the morning sun rose to shine its light upon it. I began to learn to ask that source, capital S source, that mystery of creation, Father, Mother, Creator, Source, one that has birthed me, why am I? Where am I? Who am I?" Now, you know, as a sidebar here, I remember the first time I heard about a guru from India whose entire teaching for, you know, months and months and months, if not years and years, would be to ask his pupils the question, "Who are you?" Just over and over and over again. And of course, whenever that guru had a Western pupil, the first several dozen answers to the question, "Who are you?" would be a name, a gender, a political identification, a job, a career, a history of work experiences. "I'm a mother, I'm a father, I'm a son to my mom. I'm a son to my dad. I'm Tom's brother, etc. Dozens of responses. And of course, the guru would say, no, that's not who you are. Sit with it. Understand at deeper levels. Who are you? Who are you? To truly understand who you are. The truth that is true always, that you are this essence of the creative flow of energy expressing in form. That you are a spark of the one mind of consciousness. What does that really mean? These are words, but what do they really mean? We don't know. But this is what Yeshua is saying he began to question when he was a young man and a boy. I began to ask, why am I? Why do I exist? Not why am I here in this location on the planet, or why am I interacting with this person or that person? A deeper question, why do I exist at all? Where am I? What is the true nature of this set of sensations I have that I call awareness of where I am? Who am I? What's the truth of my nature? The text goes on to say, my desire increasingly became to know the truth that could set all mankind free. I discovered that unless that freedom became fully manifested in me, it made no sense to talk about it with others. So, I sought out the greatest of minds, the best of teachers. And yes, I was blessed by a family structure that was already dedicated to understanding the mysteries of what they knew as God or Creator. They led me to many such teachers. As my own wisdom began to evolve, the teachers would look at me and say to one another, wow, something interesting is occurring here in this son of Joseph. But there were those who already knew more about me than I yet knew about myself. People like prophets and seers and astrologers and the wise ones of many cultures, they knew already that into the framework of the consensus mind of mankind, which you call the collective consciousness, into that there was to be dropped a pebble, a disruption in the force, a change in the energy. Into that still clear pool, a thought, a consciousness, a movement of questioning that would create ripples that would begin to change how the consciousness of humankind perceived itself. I did not yet know these things for myself, for my very birth into this world was veiled in mystery. It was a mystery for me, just as your birth was veiled in mystery for you as you took on being human. As I grew, I began to have revealed to me in the depth of my silent prayer and in the depth of my very silent meditation, I had revealed to me glimmers, insights, recognitions, and remembrances of other dimensions. I began to develop the ability to be in communication with masters of my lineage who had long since left the planet. I began to understand that consciousness is not limited to space and time and the volume of a body at all. As I watched the people in their busy work, I began to see that the vast majority of beings totally confused themselves, their essence, with their body. They lived as if they dwelt within the body and therefore they were imprisoned in some strange way. They lived as if what occurred to the body occurred to them. They lived as if they did not know that they could transcend the body at any moment, that they could taste the vast expanse of consciousness, that they could journey to other times and places with little more than a surrendering of attention to the world they had made. At first, I did not understand these things, and I perceived myself to be quite odd. Within me, there were conflicts as the fears in my consciousness arose, the fears that are a part of the human consensus reality. Fears like, quote, shall I remain like everyone else? Perhaps I should return to my father's carpentry shop and simply accept that I'm destined to just be a carpenter. Close quotes. However, there were other voices that spoke to me and called to me. They would come to me often in the night. And as I developed my ability to discern these other realities, these other dimensions, by shifting my attention from the world of the body to the world of inner vision, often they would come to me in the night and stand by my bed. I came to know who they were. I came to recognize the masters and teachers of a very ancient lineage of which I was just a part. They would come and they would whisper to me things like, quote, forget not the purpose for which you are sent forth from the mind of the Creator. For through you shall be birthed the beginning of an ancient remembrance, and your life shall become that which demonstrates to many the truth that only love is real. Close quote. Now, this idea that is being talked about here as though Yeshua had that message from his lineage, we were introduced to this in the last lesson, lesson 9, where it says, everyone is a minister. You cannot help but minister to the world in each moment. Therefore, you could choose to begin your ministry of enlightened consciousness now. Imagine a world with 10 million awakened children, offspring of the Creator. Imagine a multitude of human beings on the planet all at the same time who are awakened to their connection to the Christ mind. That's what is being asked of us. Yeshua says that was what was being asked of him by his visitors in the middle of the night from the ancient lineage. It's also what the way of mastery suggests is possible for each and every person who's called to this work. The text goes on to say, the point of all this is simple. I want to convey to you yet again that the life I lived as a man was not unlike your very own. I began veiled in mystery, a child among children, a human being struggling to make sense of his world. Yes, there was within me something that was calling me, a longing to know something that the world did not seem to teach. Yet at the same time, isn't it true for you, if you're listening to this kind of a teaching, if you're following the Mind Shifters Radio, if you're listening to the Way of Mastery over and over with these in-depth things, isn't it true that there's a part of you that has felt that same kind of a call, some urge to get it different, to experience life more fully, more lovingly, more peacefully, more blissfully? That same longing to touch what is invisible, to see what cannot be seen with the eyes, to hear what human ears have never heard, to embrace what arms cannot touch, to abide in perfect peace and perfect trust. Just let that sink in. Why are you listening to someone read a spiritual teaching? Why do you pick up any spiritual teaching? Isn't it true that there's a part of you that yearns and longs and has been answering a calling to have an experience that transcends what your senses can offer, what you've been trained or conditioned by your culture to believe is true? The text goes on and says, "Beloved friends, understand well, I say to you yet again that I, Yeshua, come only as your brother and your friend. I come to you as one who has walked as you walk, one who has breathed as you breathe, one who has cried as you cry, one who has laughed as you laugh. I am as you are. If there be anything that I can give unto you, it is simply this. As you look upon your life and every event that unfolds in it, every time you feel that you have failed, every time that you become conflicted, every time that you are sure you will never be able to transcend all these ups and downs and emotional waves that seem to come with living in your world, remember, I have overcome that world. And because I have done it, it is already done for you. Why? Because we share the same infinite field of mind that far transcends all levels and dimensions of manifestation. You can tap into what has already occurred. You need only look upon me as your brother and friend and acknowledge that the world has been overcome. And then accept the freedom, which is the effect of overcoming this, and accept it as your own. You don't have to create it. Life, the flow of life, infinite abundance, joy, bliss, has already been created. It's your heritage. It's the birthright of every human. And yet, on top of that has been layered countless intellectual trivialities, as this book would call them, that hide from us our true nature. This reminds me of, in the ancient Aramaic, there's a word, the word may come to me, but the word was then translated into something in Greek and then something in English, and it came down to us as the word faith. But as the scholars take a look at that and trace it back to the original Aramaic word, they find that it doesn't mean blind adherence to something that can't be seen or felt or touched. That the word faith has a lot more to do with the concept of getting consciously connected to your true nature at the core, the source of your being. Right? Connecting to your true core essence and source, like this, that will eventually be revealed to you if you ask questions like, who am I? What am I? Where am I? Why am I here? Why do I exist at all? What's my essence? And then once you're consciously connected to the rooted center of your being, then you take an action. Then you speak a word. Then you breathe, and your breath carries the creative force with it. Faith used to mean acting from the awareness of the rooted center of your being. Acting after you've gotten consciously tuned into the fact that you are a part of the flow of all life and creation. And as we were talking about earlier in the introduction to this work, if I'm actually conscious of that, it is not possible for me to act in a way that's harmful to myself or someone or something else. So this text goes on and says, so that you might learn to sit in your chair after your 5 minutes of abiding as a Christ and say to yourself, quote, here I am free. Heaven is now. The past is passed away and I choose anew. This day, I commit myself to teaching only love by sharing only loving thoughts. This one day, I will look upon each one that comes into my experience, and I will first breathe deeply the presence of the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit, what does that mean? It's an elemental force specific to humans that's implanted in each and every one of us at the moment of our inception. And it's there to help break off the effects of our errors in thought and guide us to truth and happiness, peace and happiness, light and love, if we just ask it to. This one day, I will look upon everyone who comes into my experience, and before I interact with them, I will take a breath. I will breathe deeply into the awareness of my true nature and their true nature and how we are connected by the flow of life and these elemental forces that have given rise to us. And then as I look out through my eyes, they will have been transformed. And the simple truth will be acknowledged. All minds are joined. And the person in front of me is not a stranger to me. A person in front of me is my brother or sister, my fellow traveler, a being of brilliance and light. Even if they're acting in a way that isn't very loving, that isn't rooted in their conscious awareness of their true nature. If they're acting in any way other than loving, it means they've either temporarily forgotten or they've yet to discover their brilliance. And yet that does not change their essence. Just like nothing I've ever done that I would count a success and nothing I've ever done that I would count a failure has ever increased or decreased my value as a person. My essence is not changed by the thoughts that flow through my mind or the things I've, quote, accomplished, close quotes. So today I commit myself to teaching only love by sharing only loving thoughts. In order to accomplish that, I'm going to have to look upon everyone that comes into my experience and remind myself that they are a being of brilliance and light, just like I am, that we are connected through the essence of the creative flow and the one mind. And I will look out then through my eyes, having been transformed by the simple acknowledgement of the truth that all minds are joined. And the person in front of me is not a stranger. This is a fellow traveler, a fellow brother or sister, a fellow being of brilliance and light. This is one who walks as I walk, who feels as I feel, who longs as I long, who is humbled as I am humbled, and who prays for peace as I have prayed for peace. Therefore, in the next moment, I will breathe and soften and reconnect to my source, and I will extend to them the peace for which they seek, which is my birthright and theirs. It's the essence of the creative energy flowing through each of us, and I will stay consciously connected to that as I think, speak, and act in their presence. And that's how I will teach only love. And just that much is a practice that'll change your life. Every time I've managed to do that, it's changed my experience of life dramatically. Even in the throes of an intense series of events that one might call a tragedy, whether it's a car accident or somebody seriously wounded, or a financial arrangement where somebody's been unethical and stolen thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of dollars from me. When I'm able to do that practice, when I'm able to remind myself to take a breath and get centered, when I'm able to remind myself that everyone I encounter is another being of brilliance and light, just like myself, and they're either acting from the rooted center of their being and their conscious connection to that, or their actions could be viewed by me and everyone around them as a cry for help and healing. So hidden here in Lesson 10 is yet another specific, very practical tool. I can make a decision multiple times a day to decide to teach only love. I can decide to take a breath and reconnect with my source and my true nature. Breathe and soften prior to every interaction with every person. And I can remind myself, look, I don't know who made me. I don't know when I was created. I don't know who made the person in front of me or when they were created. I don't know anything. Somebody does. There's some reason that we're here. There's some flow of creative force giving rise to all of this. I could choose to ask to be taught by that flow of life, by some intelligence that's far more integrated and far more powerful than my conscious logical mind. So I think I'll do that. I think I'll ask to be taught. I think I'll open myself to be shown. I think I'll start to tap into what so many of these great spiritual teachings tell me about how every person is a being of brilliance and light. In every moment that I ask to be shown, I can be opened to a flow of energy that goes far beyond what my physical senses might register. I can learn to look behind what my senses are telling me, what my eyes show me and the pictures my mind create, to see the shimmering radiance, as it talks about in The Way of Mastery, that underlies all things. This is a very specific, practical exercise that is being suggested. And most people, my experience has been, most people, when we read through this, they miss that as an exercise. They'll understand that here's this exercise, sit in a chair for 5 minutes a day and envision, imagine, experience what it would be like to be a creator. Wake up to the fact that your thoughts are always creating whatever you point them towards. And then maybe you want to choose to experience what it would be like to be Christ, to experience being that level of creator. And there's a very specific exercise. But a little bit later on, kind of slipped right in the middle of a page here, is another very specific exercise. And it says, I could choose every day or multiple times a day to be conscious about what I do with my mind energy and my interactions with others. I could choose to remind myself that I'm free, that I have the power of choice of what I choose to focus my conscious awareness upon, and that's what creates my experience of life moment to moment, that the essence of that bliss state that so many people are pointing towards or calling towards, or this thing they call heaven is a present moment experience available to everyone. It's here now. What's happened in the past is gone. I don't have a time machine. I can't go back and change it. And yet, in this moment, I can choose anew. So today, in this moment, I'm going to commit myself to teaching only love. How do I do that? By sharing only loving thoughts. So this day, this very day, I will choose to look upon every person I interact with. And before I interact with them, before I let my thoughts race off with them, before I open my mouth to say anything to them, I will breathe and center myself in my true nature. I will bring my conscious awareness to this essence of the Holy Spirit, this elemental force for humans that's available to break off the effects of our errors in thought and guide us to truth and happiness if we just ask it to. And I will ask to be reminded how to see everyone I interact with as a being of brilliance and light, to be reminded that they are just as I am, that they walk as I walk, they feel as I feel, they long as I long, they are humbled as I am humbled, they have prayed for peace as I have prayed for peace, they are not a stranger, they are my brother and sister, they are a fellow companion on the path. They are a being of brilliance and light, an extension of the creative energy in form. And they're either acting from that awareness, or they've either temporarily forgotten or yet to discover that brilliance. So, as I become connected to that, as I remind myself of their essence and my essence, I will stay connected to my essence as I breathe and soften and let only thoughts that are loving about myself and them come to fruition and act and speak only from those thoughts. And in that way, I will give to them, I will extend to them the peace that comes from that conscious awareness of our true nature that is our joint birthright. And by giving it to them, I will receive it more fully myself. I will extend love to them in each new present moment as a specific exercise that's laid out, just hidden here in the middle of page 123 in The Way of Mastery. Not even labeled as a specific exercise, but very much a practical how-to to improve the quality of your life and your interactions with everyone you interact with, all day, every day. And my experience, as I mentioned earlier, is that every single time I have remembered to do that, it has transformed my experience in ways words can't describe, whether it was through the drama and the intensity of a car accident, or a verbal screaming match between people, or, you know, breaking down, sobbing, crying of somebody in response to an intense situation in their life, or somebody, you know, literally stealing tens of thousands of dollars from me. It dramatically transforms my experience of life when I remember to step into that exercise. So again, thank you all for being here. I thank you for your willingness to experiment with these teachings and usher yourself into a different experience of your life. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate you.
Same here. You're very welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, May the 11th, 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I'll invite you to go to our website while we're waiting on Michael to dial in. And there are new things on the website, which is why, again, whyagain.org. And if you go under the title Healing and then down to Healing Mind, Body, and Spirit, there's several different things under there. There's information about the Avicen that we speak of often. There is a section on the healing crisis and on health issues, and there's some new things under each of those. There's also a section on orthobiony. You heard us talking about that, about Aria the other day and her learning about orthobiony. And so we had run classes at one time at Heartland. It's been several years ago, but that gives you an example of some of the things that we learned during the orthobiony class. And that was a class that Michael and I participated in and not something that we taught, but it is a phenomenal modality to add to your box of tools. And there's also, if you go under schedule, you'll see information about the codependence and communication self-study. You'll see information about the Global Book Club, which actually takes place tomorrow, and information on the Mind Shifters and Stillpoint Breathing, the monthly membership. And so all of that information is out there. It's also under events. If you're on the home screen and you scroll down, there's an events section, and you'll see it there as well. There's lots of new information, and if you can't find it, drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and let me know what you're looking for. Or if you've got my phone number, send me a text, and I'll see what I can get to put it where you can find it or to make it easier to find. And so just let me know if there's something that you're looking for on the website. There's lots and lots of information, and there's just no way to have everything on the homepage. So sometimes you have to look for it. But if you need assistance, please drop me a line, and I'll do what I can to direct you. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here. And I want to, you know, there's a powerful phrase in the ancient Aramaic where we're told that the power of life and death is in our words. That would mean that the power of sickness and disease is in our words. Are all words that are out of harmony with life the cause of death and suffering? Well, when you realize that words represent thoughts, you go back to the opening words in the book of John where we're told it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh, or at least that's what the Greeks told us. But actually in Aramaic it says, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. And what we're being shown by the cell biologists today is that when you think a thought, that thought produces a neuropeptide, literally a molecule in your body, your energy structure. And that neuropeptide circulates around in your structure till it finds a cell with the receptor site that matches. It lands on the cell and inserts itself in the cell. And if you were looking from the inside of the cell as that insertion takes place, you'd be saying, oh, there's chemistry. So thought becomes chemistry. Words represent thoughts. It become chemistry. Chemistry of destruction means cellular disease and ultimately death if we continue to engage in those energies that never belonged in the structure. And when you realize that perception is a reflection of stored mind energy from the past, then you realize that everything that the mind shows you is from the past. Let's define a word. Let's agree on a definition, if this works for everybody, that a word I offer is a tool of communication. Would seem like a pretty acceptable definition to most everyone. And if words are tools of communication, then obviously when using words, there's an interaction between two or more. In this case, as an audience, you're listening and I get to speak. If you call in, you get to speak, I get to listen. We get to have an interactive dialogue. But there's an interaction when using words between at least two. So the invitation here, and we're moving toward looking at whether we're living in the past or we actually start to live in the present. Notice that right now there are words running inside your head, words that aren't being communicated with anyone outside of you. And if our definition of word, a word is a tool of communication, if that's accurate, and that tools of communication are indicative of an interaction between two, the question becomes, who's in there with you? Who's communicating with who? If there are words running in your head and they're not being spoken to anyone else. My offering is, there's you, the listener, and then there's the past stored in the structure, representing itself, pretending to be the present. So let's use the old example I've used many times of, don't think about the color of your car. And if I say that, something moves inside of you from the color of your car. And if it's moving inside of you, obviously it had to be there. And if it was there, you know, just a second ago, or 5 seconds ago, or 10 years ago, it's from the past. So where I'm heading with this is to look at what's controlling our lives. If everything that shows up in our perceptual constructs is from the past. And how do we get to truly experience the present? And there's a really good reason to experience the present. And the reason why they call it the present is because it is a gift. Whenever you're there, there is a gift. Culture, and you've heard me refer to the SAD diet, standard American diet. People who are eating the standard American diet, junk fats, junk oils, sugar, salt, chemicals out the wazoo, are in a process of destroying their physiology. And it's, you know, what the, like, let's say, for instance, you go and you buy some white bread. They're going to tell you that that builds bodies 12 ways, or at least some advertisers from Madison Avenue will. But the truth is that the folks who milled, have been practicing milling flour for centuries, learned that if they milled the flour and took all of the nutrition out of it, they could sell it to the pig farmers who, you know, if their pigs got nutrition, they made money, they were healthier, they had more offspring, less vet bills. So they found they could sell that and then phony up the white leftover poison, call it food, and sell it to people. Brainwash them into thinking that it's food. And by so doing, where the vet bills for the pig farmer get less, their bills for those who are eating fake food get to be more. You might wonder if there's a bit of collusion going on there. But I want to move to another level. If we're accepting thoughts from the past stored in this database as a present moment experience, are we kind of doing the same thing? Are we living in a fake reality structure? We're going to define reality as the output of the mind. So often the output of people's minds has little or nothing to do with the actuality of the present moment that they're in. Very much like calling the standard American diet food is just like silly when you consider that food is based in nutrition and food actually grows in the soil. You know, it comes out of the ground. Doesn't come out of a box, doesn't come out of a factory, doesn't come out of a jar. It comes out of the ground. And so if empty denatured food processed to the nines with the nutrition sold to the animal farmers is fake, is accepting the realities based on the cycling of mind energy from the past kind of the same thing? We're in fake realities. We're living in a world that doesn't exist except as a reflection of the content of one's own mind. And my offering is the genius of the forgiveness process as it was taught 2,000 years ago in Aramaic is that what the forgiveness process does is it collapses that fake world and gives us a time frame. It might just be a fraction of a second at first to make space or to allow the actuality of the moment to come in rather than cycling mind energy from the past turned into perception and thinking that our perception is actually about life. So how do we go about interacting with true original nutrition-filled mind energy, you know, using the analogy of food, as opposed to the empty calorie recycling of thoughts from the past turned into perception by the mind, a construct of the mind? And, you know, pretty much our whole culture is based in cycling whatever they've been told from the past and believing that what is being shown by their minds is true about the present. And rarely is it true about the present. So I'm inviting everybody to contemplate their willingness and what it might be like to actually eat, like, you know, as opposed to the denatured carrot that comes in a processed package, eating it, you know, reaching in the garden, pulling a carrot out and, you know, brushing it off and putting it in your mouth, the real thing. What would it be like to actually have an original present moment thought enter your mind, something that isn't based in the past? And following that through and structuring your perceptual constructs out of that, you'd be living in an original world, having an original experience. And my offering is we are designed to have originally experienced, personally experienced. That we're designed to experience ourselves as created human essence, as the presence of love, and to function out of that state. And it's, you know, for what we call the mind, which is just that cycling information from the past game, to even contemplate or conceive of that is an impossibility. We have to rise to the level of being to comprehend what that might look like, what that might be experienced as. So the question is, are you willing to work with that and to come to the point where you're actually, you know, eating full nutrition, present moment, live, actual thoughts? And my offering is best definition of thinking that I've found to date is that it is the ability to keep love conscious, active, and present in your mind, whatever's happening in your world. Cycling information from the past is not thinking. The truth is, if most people said what they thought, they'd be speechless, because most people have never had, outside of their childhood, an original thought. I watch Aria at 3.5, and it's just awesome to watch her living in that original space, and we support her with that. So what would be like, would it be like? And I'm not saying I know this fully myself. I'm tasting it more and more. But to withdraw from the cycling of information from the past and actually be here in the present, awesome opportunity and an awesome experience. And it first and foremost comes out of collapsing perception through forgiveness. What forgiveness does, and remember that forgiveness is not about I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. Forgiveness is a tool with which you collapse the constructed world of perception, the constructed world of the past, and you make a space for original mind energy, like full nutritional mind energy, to come into your structure. At first, it's almost like, well, what can I possibly do with that? Well, what you could do is you could live truly as a human being, as conscious, active, present love. And the objective of everything we're doing with this work is to support every mind, heart, and being on the planet having that experience. Functioning truly as a human being, realizing who we are, individually, collectively, together as one, that we are the active presence of love. And that everything else is an habituated thought pattern from the past. And when we wake up to the truth of who we are and begin to actually originate mind energy, then we get to bring that mind energy, the direction it gives us, to fruition and experience things that have never been experienced in the past. So to me, that's the energy experience we're designed to have and the objective of this work. So I would love to have your thoughts on that. I'd love to hear from you. Our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, if you're on one of the stations we're syndicated on, we can't see or communicate with you through our switchboard. But if you call that number, you're calling into our switchboard. Jeannie will be able to see you've called in. And when you raise a hand, when you push one, if you've got something to say, then that pushing that number one on your keypad raises a hand, and Jane knows you want to talk to us. So I'd love to open the lines to, what have you got to say? What do you think about that? Any thoughts for anybody? 563-999-3581. Call that number, push one, and we'll be having a conversation. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. So, someone, come on, let's press one. You've got 40 minutes, plenty of time to discuss.
Yeah, we've got
whatever.
Lots of time for conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind? And while we're waiting for that, Thursday at 3:30 in the afternoon, Eastern Time, you can click the Zoom link on our website and be part of the Why Is This Happening to Me Again study group. The book that we're studying is my book, and it's a British, actually global British study group called Hear My Voice. And we'll be doing that at 3:30 on Zoom, so you can grab that link and be with us for that. It would be a delight to have you here, if you're there, or on Zoom. And, of course, on Saturday, we've got Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing happening. Start at 11 o'clock on Eastern Time on Saturday morning and through to completion. And usually that's, 1 o'clock or so, and then on Tuesday we'll be doing the follow-up session each month. We do Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing the second Saturday of the month, and then the Tuesday following that second Saturday at 7 in the evening. So if you want to join us for that, drop Jeannie a note. Pre-registration is required for that, not for the book study. And Jeannie's email is Jeannie at whyagain.org. Jeannie at whyagain.org. So if you want to drop her a note, you're interested in joining us for the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, then she'll get back to you. You can look at the flyer if you go to our website, whyagain.org. You'll see a link that says flyers or events. Click on that and you'll see what the details are. And if you're out there in listener land, we'd love to have a conversation. So what's on your mind? What's happening in your world? How can we support you? Which of the tools are you using? Which ones are you finding to be most advantageous or beneficial? And do you have questions or need support with the use of any of the tools? Our purpose for doing this show is to be there to create support for a conversation based in forgiveness. So if you're out there in listener land, push one. Let's talk about it.
Well, while we're waiting on someone to press one, we've been talking about perception the last couple of days, and actually that's the next Mind Shifters list is Living Without Perception and Memory. And this just popped up. It's A Course in Miracles, and some will read it, and then if nobody else has a hand up, maybe you can explain it a little further.
Let's go for it.
To the extent to which you value guilt, to that extent, you will perceive a world in which attack is justified. To the extent to which you recognize that guilt is meaningless, to that extent, you will perceive attack cannot be justified. This is in accord with perception's fundamental law. You see what you believe is there, and you believe it's there because you want it there. Perception has no other law than this. The rest but stems from this, to hold it up and offer it support. This is perception's form adapted to this world of God's more basic law that love creates itself and nothing but itself.
Well, my take is with that quote, we're back to one of my favorite lessons from the Course, and I think it's one of the most important lessons, yet one of the most misunderstood lessons in the Course, what is the world? And the Course defines the world, and it's important to distinguish the fact that the Course talks about two different worlds. I wish that when they did the editing on it, they had made the word world is used to represent the actuality of the moment. I wish they'd used a capital W and then a lowercase w for the world of perception, the world between our ears. You know, six people who are at an accident go into a courtroom and you listen to them, you wonder if any two were at the same accident. Well, yes, they were all at the same external event, the same capital W world event happened for them. But each one of them, according to what the energetic patterns that happened during that accident, you know, stimulated perception, and each experienced a reality in their minds that was of their own making. So in that sense, no two of them were at the same accident. So the Course starts out and says in that lesson, what is the world? It says the world is false perception. It was born of error. It has not left its source. And here's the key line from that lesson that applies to what you just read. And that is, the Course says, it, that is the world you see, the world of perception, will remain no longer than the thought that gave it birth is cherished. In other words, you're not really holding on to and finding a value for that world. That can work like this. Oh, I hate being angry. I wish I could get rid of my anger. But you know, sometimes I don't feel safe and my anger protects me, so I'm going to hold on to this rage. So here I am, I'm valuing it. So now whenever something comes along that resonates my anger, because I've cherished thoughts of anger, cherished means I've got a use for them. You know, if I decided, and you know, it's another great lesson in the course that says, in my defenselessness, my power and safety lie. If I decided that I'm willing to live defenseless, then I could give up all thoughts of anger. If I've got to keep one of them tucked away because I think it will protect me, then I'm cherishing it, I'm valuing it, and therefore it will remain with me. And then whenever triggered into activity, it will inject an energy, transparently inject an energy, literally into the lowercase w, the world I see, the world of perception, the constructs of my mind. So if I see an angry world, it's because I value and cherish thoughts based in anger. If I see a sad world, it's because I value and cherish thoughts based on sadness, loss. When I forgive as to those things, I let loose of them, perception's going to change. And someone looks and says, well, you know, gee, there was a loss of a life there. That's really sad. Well, that's one way to observe and perceive, one construct you could build about it. And maybe a different construct would be, you know, here's a person who's ready to move on from their lives and ready to go to the next level of what life is about for them. So what would be sad about that? Do we build perceptual constructs based in rage, fear, grief, anger, insecurity, safety or lack of safety? Do we build a world out of that because we hold those thoughts? That would be my offering. The world, you know, there's another lesson in the course that says, I've given this world all the meaning that it has for me. I've given every perception the meaning that it has. And when I get to the point where I no longer value it, and I can devalue it, I can weaken its hold on me through forgiveness, once I'm ready to let go of that, then I'll never construct my perception out of that mind energy again. I'll construct a different world, a different scenario out of the scenarios that yesterday were perhaps sad or fearful or rageful or, you know, whatever I think they are. And to remember that, you know, in this work, our definition of denial is when I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of something inside of me, then that denial means that the real cause, the energy that's moving in me that causes me to feel and see the world a certain way is there, one, because I value it, and I hide it from myself when I blame somebody else for it. Well, the world just did it to me. That's how those people are. They're just doing it to me all the time. And so when I realize that if I dissociate from something, I guarantee that anything that shows up in my life that can resonate what is in me from the past that I've dissociated from, because of the dissociation, because of the denial, thinking or speaking as though something outside of me is the cause of this being inside of me, hiding that from myself, somebody comes along and triggers it into activity, and now what I literally do is I use it to build my perception, my construct about them, and I build my construct about them in a certain way because I value that particular piece of mind energy. When I've applied forgiveness to it sufficiently, then the dissolution of that mind energy can occur, and I can be finished with that experience. Does that kind of get where you wanted to go with that one, Jeannie? That's a good quote.
Yeah, that explained it really well. Thanks.
Any other thoughts about it?
No. I think the other quote that you gave about that it will remain no longer than the thought that gave it birth is cherished. That too is, you know, error perception totally changes. It reminded me of, I was looking for the link and I can't find it, but we were watching something and it was simple things like the speaker, I think it was on a TED Talk, and he said, you know, is this square a different color from that square? And it looks like it is,
right,
based on what's around it. But then when you take the things that are around it away, they're identical. So it's kind of like, you know, we're in a particular situation and we supposedly see it a certain way. And then if you remove the stuff that's around it, in other words, forgive and remove our thoughts about it, then we can see it as it truly is.
Accurately.
Yes.
You see the actuality of the thing rather than be locked into a certain perceptual construct about it. Yep, that's right on.
Does somebody have a comment or question? Press 1.
If you're out there in listener land, how are your worksheets going? Are you using the worksheet process? Remember that you can go to the website, whyagain.org, and you can access the worksheet process live and do it there on the site. You can download the worksheet, the forgiveness process called Reality Management. There are several different versions of the worksheet on the website. You can download that free from the website. And or you can go to your app store on your phone and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And when you type that in to your app store, whether you've got an Android phone or an iPhone, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. And on your phone, you can go into the program with minimal permissions. When I say minimal, we purposely designed the app so that you had total, complete privacy, that you could trust that you were able, the only one able to see the worksheet that you do and the input that you have there, because the app only asks for one permission, and that is to use the internet in order to be able to operate. It doesn't ask for permission to dial your phone or use your camera or make phone calls or send texts or, you know, alter the content of your hard drive. Or it doesn't have any of those permissions that so many apps have. Simple, one permission to use the internet. And when you complete a worksheet, if you wish, you can then hit save as a PDF and you can save that on your phone. And it will at that point ask for the only other permission it will ever ask for, a second one, and that is to save to your hard drive. Otherwise, that's all there is to it. And so you can then do either one of two different versions of the forgiveness process, two different versions of the worksheet. And there's also a children's game called the Drag-On, Cling-On game if you want to introduce forgiveness to kids. Each page of the app, one of the latest functions Jeannie has put in with the new edition of the app, you can ask a question on any page. There's a link there. You just click it, the button, and ask your question. Hit send. Jeannie will get it. We'll answer it on the show, and we'll drop you back a note that tells you exactly the date and time we answered it so that you can go back and get the answer for yourself. So, and, of course, there are links to the commitment and all kinds of different access to our website right there on your phone through the app. So it's there to be as functional as possible. If you use it and you find any problems with it, please let us know. And or if you, you know, have a creative thought about, gee, maybe this could be done with the app and make it more functional, more useful, then we would love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your suggestions. You know, our minds only go so far, and everybody that engages in this work that has a creative idea that can support us in expanding the functionality of it, we'd love to hear it. So drop us a note. You can drop the note right from inside the app. And the commitment is there. You can utilize the commitment. There are just all kinds of pages directly from the website can be accessed from the app. And so we've made it, and we continue to make it, as functional as possible to make it worthwhile and working for you. But if you have a suggestion on, gee, maybe you could do this, something we haven't thought of, we'd love to hear it. Maybe you've seen something really functional on another app that you go, oh, wow, that would really work well here. Then we'll look at it and see if there's a way to integrate it into the app. So any kind of support we can offer, we're here to do it. And we would love to have your support in building out the tools that we are developing and have developed to make them as functional as possible. And if you're in the listening on your phone, push one and let's have a conversation. What are your thoughts about all of this? How can we support you? Maybe you've got an experience to share of the utilizing of one of the tools. Or maybe where the tool wasn't very user-friendly for you, you have a question. How can we support you? We've got about 25 minutes, so there's lots of time for conversation. Would love to hear your voice. Push one, and let's talk about it. How can we support you?
Actually, if you're talking about the app, I'm actually multitasking here. I'm talking to my guy in India, and he's going to work on, I told him, I said, this might just be me because I'm not familiar with iPhones as much as I am Androids. And Android for me is simple, like if you click on the commitment in the app, it takes you to the website and there is the commitment. And then when you're finished, there's a back button at the bottom of the Android phone and I click it and it takes me right back to the app. But the iPhone, I can't get it to do that. And I said, it might just be me not knowing the iPhone. And he said he was going to work on it and see if it was something within the app, and he was going to fix it if it was. So I really appreciate my guy in India.
Sweet. And we extend love in his direction, support of his family. He's got, if I remember correctly, a little girl.
Yes. And she's about two. Yeah. And he actually had been sick. It wasn't COVID, but he had been sick. But he just, I asked him how he was doing, and he said he's back to normal. So therefore, a couple of weeks, he was only working like 3 or 4 hours a day because of his intestinal issues that were going on. And so he says he's now back to normal. So, and you were talking about food at the beginning of the thing, and what happened for him was he went out and ate out and said, you know, he should have known better. And, you know, that's what happens. Sometimes we go out to eat and we have no idea what they're serving us and what they've put on it or not put on it, or whether it's, you know, GMO'd or whatever. We have gotten to where we totally ask, and to be aware that a lot of people aren't aware. I mean, it's really kind of wild when we've been in restaurants and say maybe ordered a baked potato and we ask them if they have real butter. And they look at us like, what else is there? And it'll be some kind of a blended margarine or something, and it's not butter, and they have no clue. Or if when we ate pancakes and we'd order syrup and they'd bring sugar water called, you know, Aunt Jemima or something, and it's like, this isn't maple syrup. And they'd look at us like, what do you mean? So educating yourself so you can educate the servers too. I know, just like when we order things and have them delivered from our grocery store here, and I specifically say the distilled water in clear plastic bottles, and sometimes they still bring the milky ones, and I'll refuse it, and they're like, why? And so I explain. So there's just lots of things, and people out there just don't know. They just take what's given them and believe it instead of questioning it.
Right. You look at the number of people that buy milk and feed their kids milk, and they're in those smoky plastic bottles. Milk is virtually always in that, unless you could find it in clear glass or you do it in a carton of some kind. But, you know, the off-gassing materials in that smoky-type plastic are literally hormone. They mimic female hormones. So, you know, kids are being fed these hormone-like chemicals and hormone interrupters, and parents have no idea what's going on or why things are happening. It's just, it's really very bizarre. And interestingly enough, in order to go into the food business, you don't have to know anything about food. I know that I make it a point when there's a problem with a food in the grocery store. Like, you know, one of my big pet peeves is, why are we not supporting American farmers? Why are we importing all this stuff from Mexico, from Guatemala, from places where we have no idea what they're using on the food? What happened to buying American? And it's interesting, and over the years, when I make a point, I'll take time to go and find a manager and talk to them about that. And the most common comment I get is, well, I'm just a manager. I don't know anything about that stuff. It's like, well, why are you managing people's food when you don't know anything about food? I mean, it's the most important thing you can put in your structure, aside from what you do with your mind. And you're telling me you don't know anything about it? How bizarre is that? How crazy is that? You can start a restaurant and you can buy and order. I mean, you look at the garbage oils, the vegetable oils that are used because they're cheap. I mean, canola oil, rapeseed oil is just the cheapest garbage that you could possibly use. And most of it is GMO'd. And it just has all kinds of disruptive effects on the structure. But you can go to the restaurant business and not know anything about that. And you go to your supplier and you just buy the cheapest garbage you can. And, well, you know, we fry in that. That's what we do. Well, we put that in our salad dressings. Well, that's what we do. And it's like, are you kidding me? In any event, it's definitely time for us to get conscious about everything and every aspect of our lives. And food is certainly a big part of it. You know, when people come to an intensive at Heartland, and I don't know when we're going to be opening Heartland again. We're not doing anything this summer with the ripples throughout the culture with COVID. You know, perhaps next summer we'll do something. But when people come to Heartland, we do a total fresh and raw dietary regimen. And say, for instance, if we make salad dressings, you know, gee, we can buy, you know, gallons of salad oil for, I don't even remember now, something like $4 or something like that. And instead, we'll spend $20 on a gallon of a high-quality olive oil because the body can't process that junk oil, garbage oil that's cheap. And sometimes people think, well, I can't afford the better stuff, and they don't realize that by not affording it, they end up paying for it with challenges with their health. And in the long run, it's more expensive to not pay attention and to use foods that are actually foods. And the sophistry involved in the culture is atrocious. The fraud. You know, if you're familiar with that word, sophistry, it's a word that described a group of Greek philosophers who used to travel around Greece, charging big bucks to the wealthy to teach the children of the wealthy how to lie and make their lies appear true so that they could control the peons. Now, It's not much different with food. We've been this sophistry. Oh, here's food. We have this, you know, denatured white flour that all the nutrition's been taken out of. We fried it in a vat of, you know, hydrogenated canola oil, and then we used an hydrogenated thing we call margarine. And hydrogenated fats, the body can't process at all. And we put that on your toast for you, and here you go. You got this white poison, white bread, You've got this leftover junk oil, and then you get some peanut butter, which is hydrogenated fat and sugar, and you get strawberry jam, and what they call strawberry jam is a dyed product which has no strawberries in it whatsoever. They're fake. You know, it's like interesting. We have, there's so much food where it's like fake lemons or fake strawberry, and then you go out and you buy, let's say, a cleaner for your to polish your tables, and it'll say on the container, real lemon, contains real lemon. The food doesn't have any, but the cleaner for the table does. And it's the whole thing is just so silly. And they wonder why, you know, degenerative diseases are happening, and, you know, the craziness of it all. So they're all things to just become conscious of. And if you've been at Heartland, you know what our fresh and raw food program is like. And that food program is something that most people take home with them, at least to some degree. And, I mean, the average person comes to a 9-day intensive and they knock off 25 or 30 pounds and they feel more vital and more alive at every turn as they leave that intensive, and hopefully to some degree, you know, there's usually a swing back into some of the old habits, but to some degree people continue with what they've learned, and so that's our objective, is to support people in moving in the direction of becoming conscious in every aspect of life and really truly working on truth, being able to discern truth and what's sophistry, and to really function as the presence of love, as we're designed to. And basically, you know, all of that is incorporated and encompassed in the tools and the use of the tools as you put them to work in your life. Life becomes more and more conscious. So that's our objective. That's what we're here for. That's what we're here to support you in, and we'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a thought, push one. Let's have a conversation. So do we have any hands up, Jeannie? Anything happening in the chat room or anybody with a hand up in the phone queue?
No, it's all quiet. We've got 10 minutes.
Okay.
Plenty of time. Press one.
With 10 minutes left, I still have lots of work to do in the garden. And so if nobody has a conversation, I'm complete with monologue for today. And so if I'd rather have a conversation with somebody, but we need to have somebody to have a conversation with. So if there are no hands up and no conversation to be had, then what do you say we close the show out? We'll finish a little early, and we'll get to have a little more time with Aria Rain, and I'll go spend some time working on those patio stones in the garden. So everybody, we appreciate you joining us. Hold the space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. The tools are designed to support you in doing that. Have a blessed rest of the day. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.